bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you a ripe one, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a pickin'. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure, but it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs. You can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side. Put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes. Homegrown tomatoes. What'll life be without homegrown tomatoes?
Friends, another week has gone by, and here we are. We're ready to talk to Master Gardener Ed Bajarski, because this is In the Garden. I'm Oren Pearson, and this is your chance to learn from the best. Master Gardener Ed Bajarski, full of helpful, useful knowledge for all of us wannabe green thumb rainforest gardeners. And of course, we do want to thank the Flower Farm for helping underwrite this program. They're down there at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing, every day but Wednesday. Their number is 772-3464. You know, they're a great resource for garden materials. They've got planters and soil. And, of course, their dahlias are in bloom, available by the stem in bouquets or bouquet subscriptions. That's the Flower Farm. All right. Well, I hope we've got Ed Bajarski on the line here. We coming in loud and clear for you there, Ed?
I can hear you, Oren.
All righty. Well, it's good to have you on the line, and
yeah,
welcome to Thursday.
It's good. Yeah, it's a good thing I can do this hands-free, because I got slimy hands from laying the sockeye scraps out onto the drying racks. But
cool.
That's okay. A little less slime. I mean, we've got to have some slime in the summertime, right?
Yeah, it's not a summertime if it's not got a little slime, you know?
Yeah, we can. The nice thing is, we've had so few slugs, we haven't had to deal with their slime.
Dang, that's nice.
Yeah.
What do you think that's owing to? Just the dryness?
Well, I think a combination. Yes, the dryness. Of course, the last couple of weeks, it's been 2 weeks of dry weather, pretty amazing. But also, I think the winter that we had, that we went through and had cold, dry, frost penetrated deep. And yeah. I think that really thinned them out a lot, too. So
good.
Whatever the reason is, we are enjoying that. And, gee, our theme song, I do have tomatoes starting to turn color in my greenhouse.
Cool.
So that's a good thing. We're eating cucumbers. And anxiously, the rain is in the forecast. It's cloudy here.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of mist. We've gotten about a tenth of an inch.
Mm-hmm.
And we need more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to come. We're exactly the same here. Clouds in the sky, moisture in the air, but not rain yet. Not quite, but we'll see. Tomorrow should be interesting.
And the next week or so, and however long it lasts. I think we've got Sunday as a nice day predicted for us.
Oh.
But I've got it's been going well, the harvest of... Got the garlic. I've got about 85% of my garlic harvested here, and they look terrific. Actually, in my garden, we're going to have a little garlic harvest workshop Saturday for some local folks.
Ooh.
Should be kind of fun. Show them how to harvest. We'll show them how I've already got a lot of the stuff up and cleaned and drying, curing, and furnace room, over the wood stove, in the greenhouses, and everywhere.
Wonderful.
So it's looking good, and the raspberries are ripening. We picked a pint of raspberries last night. They're terrific. I'm actually debating putting up a roof over our raspberry patch so that when the rains do come, we get a chance to eat more rather than them getting all moldy.
Yeah. Well, that's tempting. Understandable. It has been a good raspberry year, hasn't it? Boy, oh boy.
So far, looks good. Not much for is a really poor year that I have seen for cherries locally. Very few of them. Hmm. Again, probably because of the really poor, cold, wet summer we had last year.
Right.
But this dry, warm, well, month of July, basically, should help the plants put on lots of flowers, hopefully store lots of food for next year, both for flowering plants and for fruiting trees and shrubs and all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. Something to look forward to. A little delayed gratification there. Yeah.
I mean, Mother Nature will give us what she can or wants to or feels like, and we just have to make the best of that.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, at least in our vegetable garden, we can influence it a little bit with fertilizer and timely watering. I've already got plans for another hoop house to be built this fall, at least a frame up this fall, and then cover in the spring so we can, again, help influence or modify some of Mother Nature's gifts, shall we say.
Definitely. Yeah, well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that the Bayarsky garden is growing even more. That's a beautiful thing to hear. What are going to be your, like, top three practical recommendations at your garlic harvesting workshop? Like, what are a little tiny fistful of good ideas that people...
Sure. Timing is important, and again, having had the dry weather, it is supposed to be raining on Saturday for us, but that's okay, that getting the last of it out is good timing. We're looking at all of the garlic that I have harvested. It has not been... Very few of the bulbs have had the outer skins cracking open. So again, the timing of this dry weather is just outstanding. And we kind of got it last year too, so I don't know that we can count on that. But timing for harvest, certainly even the planting and the fertilizing before, you know, is really, really important. And then just hoping for the good weather that we can get. So that the harvest time, fertilizing, fall planting, and then an early spring fertilizing too, usually.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the top ones. And I guess choosing the right varieties.
Mm. Yeah, like a hardneck. What's your favorite recommended variety at the moment?
So I'll give you about three.
Cool.
In the porcelain type, which has few but very large cloves, music, and German porcelain, also known as German white or Northern white. Those are really good. Romanian red, outstanding this year. And try to find a Rocambole, which is a type. It's one of the three or four types of hardnecks. Has more somewhat smaller cloves, but great flavor. And Russian Giant is a good one in that group.
Mm. Okay, good. Well, hopefully people scribble down some notes when they're doing a little looking around for or thinking about, you know, planting. But that's planting the garlic is still a few months off, right?
Yeah, that won't happen until October for me, at least.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that'll go along. We kind of talked about bulbs, tulips and daffodils. Well, garlic planting time is the same time.
Perfect.
So some people might well put them in late September. I've planted garlic into October, November, and even occasionally when we've had a spell of warm, dry weather in December. So, because they still do need about 90 days plus of cold temperatures to grow roots in the ground, get established before they sprout in the spring. And again, that's likewise not unlike the tulips and daffodils that need that same chilling time also.
Uh-huh. Yes, that makes sense. The simultaneous garlic are kind of bulbs-ish, you know? So anyway, good. That's good timing to think about when we're ordering. And so drifting off the topic of garlic a little bit here, one thing that we haven't talked much about is growing herbs.
That that's true. And I mean, yeah, we hear, I guess if I had only one herb to have, I suppose it probably would be garlic. But to get away from that, we have annuals that, and I suppose some of the easiest ones are dill and possibly fennel and cilantro, which if you let it go to seed will give you coriander seeds. And my wife reminds me, parsley, again, another easy one to grow, tolerates the cool weather here well, and grows quite vigorously. And, you know, growing it is good, harvesting when it's fresh is good, but then how do we keep it, harvest it, store it for long-term use?
Yeah.
So, well, we can talk about the different ones, but dill is easy, dries extremely well, keeps lots of flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Cilantro, dried cilantro has no flavor whatsoever. So that one, if you can, if you have the space to get some freezer space, you can actually freeze it, and we'll talk about a few others that work well for that too, is freeze it in ice cubes, or you can even, although I guess I haven't done that with cilantro, but with some other herbs that we'll talk about, putting them into either vinegar or warming up oil. So we have flavored oils and vinegars that we can use in cooking or for making salad dressings.
Oh, okay. So what you're saving is sort of the essence of the herb, but not as much the leaf.
Exactly. Yeah, for something like vinegars, a lot of folks will just soak the herbs in the vinegar and even strain them out, and then set those jars of vinegar aside. And usually when you're keeping those, you do, and this applies to the herb, just the dried herbs also, is drying them at a fairly low temperature, like 120, 130 degrees if you're using a dehydrator, or even at room temperature, just either hanging them up or spreading them out on cookie sheets will also work to dry indoors until they're crunchy, and then you pack them into jars and try to keep them in a low light situation, because light does denature, does take away from the flavor of the herbs.
Hmm.
But some other ones, so some of the, say, perennial herbs, another annual, I treat it as an annual at least, is basil.
Hmm.
And that one I grow generally indoors, and under lights, that works very well. And I was just talking to a friend this morning. He was saying he's got basil plants that he's been growing in sort of a miniature hydroponic system he has. Just has, I guess, six holes or six spaces with a little reservoir and a light over the top with a timer. And that, he said, he has some of his, he called them monster plants that were a year old. This is basil plants, a year old.
Wow.
So they've been growing and growing, and with the lower light levels, like 12 hours of daylight, where I tend to grow much of my stuff at 14 or more, it has a tendency to bolt.
Hmm.
But the lower, shorter day length, then they don't bolt. They keep growing as long as you keep feeding them, keep watering them. That's something, you know, you can use, again, in fresh cooking. I mean, we use it in salads, use it in pasta sauces, and all sorts of different places, making our chimichurri and pesto also.
Mm, yeah, nice big basil plant in the house. Ooh, yeah, that's a great, great addition to the kitchen. Yeah.
Certainly is. And so then if we get into some of the more perennial, you know, there's tender perennial and tough perennial herbs.
Mm.
I suppose in the tough ones, we might throw in chives as a good one. Oregano, as long as you have good drainage, grows, I mean, it'll grow in sandy gravel. Grows just fine in the garden and will come back very well. Got to remember, a lot of the herbs, some of these others are in the mint family, you know, and the mint, of course, we may not cover mint too much other than to say that most of them do grow well. Spearmint, peppermint, there's chocolate mint and orange mint and other assorted different flavors of mint. If anything, usually you have to try to restrict their growth.
Right.
Whether you plant them in a large pot, perhaps sunk in the ground, or even just grow them above ground so that they don't take over the world, which they can certainly do.
Yeah, they're remarkably hardy around here. Seems like a good one for, you know, a nice big container, but they'll pack that container and seemingly live forever.
It seems like it, yes. And certainly if, you know, if you want to get some or if somebody else has a good one, you know, you might be visiting, and they're really easy to divide, to propagate, get some more of them. And they're easy, again, drying mint works really well, certainly for that. And, again, if you want to make a mint vinegar, that, again, works fairly well. I have not done mint in oil, but that's still another way to use it, depending on what your preferences might be.
Sure.
And it can be frozen, too. So a lot of different ways to use that.
Mm-hmm. You can make a mint simple syrup.
Yep, there you go. You know, whether that be for your favorite mint juleps or other who knows what.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Mm-hmm. And you can certainly throw them in. Makes great additions to tea if you've got it dried.
Oh, yeah.
So the oregano, again, that one is really easy to dry and is really tough. Some of the more challenging ones, well, let's go back at least briefly to chives. Drying chives is easy. Unfortunately, again, dried chives have little or no flavor.
Right.
So that's one of those that is better off if you want to use them for the winter to freeze those, again, in ice cube trays or small plastic bags or small plastic containers. That works well. Then, at least one of my big favorites, of course, is rosemary.
Mm-hmm.
And that one normally will not survive the winter outdoors around here.
Mm-hmm.
Might in a place like Ketchikan, where it's milder, if they're kept on the dry side.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a big plant in a 5-gallon tub that I've had about 5 years. That one goes into my garage in a window for the winter time, and I can continue to pinch off some of the fresh rosemary from that to use in all sorts of different stuff when I'm cooking.
Wow.
But rosemary does dry very nicely also. So that's a really good one. You know, you have your jars of various dried herbs that you can be using again. The challenge with keeping rosemary alive in a pot indoors is it's very sensitive to both overwatering and underwatering, and I have killed lots of it. lots and lots of plants over the years, and I bring in lots of plants every year to sell, and most of my customers kill theirs too, so they have to come back and get some more. So it's a great plant to grow if you're successful, and otherwise to sell to those folks who are not.
That is absolutely true. I've bought rosemary starts a few times and just watched them die. So they're great. We can't help it. You want to have rosemary grown at your house, you know, and if you figure out how to dial it in, get your habits lined up with its needs, well, there you go. You can enjoy your fresh rosemary.
You certainly can. A couple more good ones that are more or less annuals. I mean, they're a perennial herb in places like California or even Washington State. And a couple more. Sage is a good one. And sage can be overwintered in pots in a greenhouse. Keep it on the dry side. It's a lot less sensitive to the drying out than rosemary is. Thyme is another one, and there's lots of different kinds and flavors of thyme. And that is one of the kind of sensitive ones. Certainly grows great, you know, sage, thyme, rosemary, oregano. They all grow well in pots out on my deck in the summertime. But I rarely have the time to overwinter successfully.
Mm.
So I need to keep working on that.
Is it a matter of light for any of these overwintering attempts as far as, is it just too dim inside over the winter for these
herbs? Well, yeah, that affects their growth. So that even my rosemary that's in a garage window, it doesn't get any extra supplemental light.
Mm-hmm.
So it does tend to stretch toward the light. So, I mean, I pinch the tips off and assuming it survives the winter, then it kind of gets back to normal growth when the days get longer in the spring.
Mm.
So, yes, and that applies to a lot of the other herbs, too. They will tend to stretch. They are used to, so many of them are native to a Mediterranean climate.
Oh.
So, again, they do great in California where it's hot and dry in the summertime and fairly dry in the winter. I mean, and if they get rain, it tends to be a winter rain. So that's their, I guess, adaptation to the climate. And, of course, that's not quite what we have here. So it is a balancing act of light and temperature and moisture to try to keep some of these alive. So again, that's where trying to work out your preservation technique for storage really, so that we can keep cooking with hopefully our own, hopefully organically grown herbs through the winter.
Yeah, you know, as soon as you mentioned chives and trying to preserve chives, I started imagining the flavor of like a chive infused olive oil, and I could totally see that drizzling across a steak or something like that over the winter. Sounds delicious. But that reminded me of what's a good, you know, sort of procedural recommendation for making these sort of preserving oils, because I know a few years back we talked about botulism hazard when storing garlic in oil. So, like, what's the best way to make that?
That's a really good point, and you've got a couple of choices. So certainly you can dry, you know, generally drying the herbs, and if you dried the herbs at a warmer temperature, then that will help in that way. But if the alternative is, and this is how I do and is recommended for garlic in oil, is gently heating it. You know, have a pan on the stove, gently heating the olive oil or other oils too, whether you're using canola or some other type of oil, avocado oil, others, different ones work.
Mm-hmm. Rice bran oil has a good high heat point.
Yeah, so you can heat the herbs in the oil, and you could use certainly a thermometer too. At least with the garlic, of course, it's got moisture in it, so it'll bubble away quite vigorously. But you want to be careful not to brown it. You know, that will not be good flavor. To brown the garlic in there. So you just warm it gently. But with the other oils, again, with the other herbs, you warm them up. You could use a temperature. You could certainly use something like a candy thermometer. Probably would be recommended. To get them up into the 180 degree range or a bit higher to 200 degrees, and then just turn the oil off, and again let it cool. Put it into pretty much glass jars. It just will have to be, and cap them, and again keep them in a dark cupboard or something like that, appropriately labeled, to then be able to use for the winter time.
Gotcha. Okay, so heat the oil. Not above 200, but not below 180. And
I don't know about the top temperature. Again, you may have to do a little experimenting and even do a little bit of additional research online.
Right.
On that.
Verifying. Good. Okay. Well, that's a good general kind of pointing people in the right direction as far as the safe food safe practice around making those preservation oils for your herbs and goodies. But I know that can be a real delicious, you know, peppers too. Boy, if you happen to have any hot peppers growing in your greenhouse, which is, you know, not an easy thing to do in the rainforest. But I've had some hot pepper infused oil that was, boy, pop your popcorn in that. Oi.
Well, that sounds interesting. Yeah, I haven't had that one before. Okay.
Mm-mm. Too good. Well, so I just had Lars join us in the studio. He's our country music host after our program right here, but I think he's also an enthusiastic gardener. I believe he has a question for Ed Bajarski. Let's slap those headphones on you there, Lars.
Yes, I do. Thank you, Warren. Hi, Ed.
Good afternoon.
I have a question on when do you know your cherries are ready to harvest?
Let's see. You mean you still have some left that the birds haven't eaten yet?
Yeah, they've left them alone. I can't believe it.
Okay. Well, I would say, if I don't know if you need to recruit some cherry tasters from your neighborhood. I don't know if you have children or loved ones or other interested parties, and they can say, oh, we're going to have to taste, you know, some of them may say, well, sorry, the first handful, we couldn't tell enough. We're going to have to take a couple of quarts with us to see if they're any good at home. And maybe to see if a pie is appropriate or not, or whether they're ready. And then, they may tell you, well, sorry, you can't pick them yet until we give the okay.
That sounds
I would
like
say the taste test is the perfect one.
Okay. If they're sweet and tasty, then they're ready, huh?
Certainly the cherries will soften also. I mean, if you're fondling your cherries very much, go out there and certainly they will start to soften also. And the key too is getting them off. You know, with the weather that we have predicted that we're supposed to get the rain, ripe cherries will, if you get much rain, they will absorb a lot of moisture quickly. I mean, literally overnight or in less time than that. And will crack, and then they rot. So, I mean, I'm not going to suggest that you wait until they crack before you pick them. So I think you're probably better get out there and do some, you know, enlist your friends in a cherry sampling tasting gathering.
Yeah, I was thinking about picking the ripest ones this evening after the radio show, and thank goodness I got the both cherry trees covered. To keep the rain off, because I lost the cherries before to the rain.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Ah, yeah. Well, that's a good plan. Okay, that'll help. Yeah, I mean, I'm debating taking, I've got an old Costco shelter bits and pieces, and thinking about doing that with my raspberry patch for the same reason, so that they don't all rot out there as they're ripening.
Oh,
so,
rain
will
wipe.
Throw some plastic over the framework, and then we can go in there and comfortably pick raspberries out of the rain.
Ah, that's good to know about the rain doing your raspberries in, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, this with the forecast changing, it's time to just panic about some of our favorite berry bushes and trees, huh? It's time to pick. Pick them up. Gather your friends.
Sounds good. Yeah, freeze berries, make jam, jelly, preserves, juices, whatever it takes.
Right. Yeah, this is a good time. Your friends will not turn you away if you arrive with a raspberry or a cherry dessert at your next getting together.
Question.
Oh, Lars has got. Here we go.
I've read that when you freeze your fruit, or when you want to put them in those vacuum sealed bags, you're supposed to freeze them first and then vacuum seal them. Will they last till like October or November if I do that?
Oh yeah,
jelly and
definitely.
Jelly.
I mean, and the best, yeah. So again, use something like a cookie sheet that you can line with plastic, or wide trays. And so lay the berries out there like in just a single layer. Freeze them just overnight. Doesn't take very long. Probably just a few hours, depending on your freezer. And that way, because otherwise they're way too juicy to vacuum. That makes a heck of a mess. But once they're frozen, then you just pour in, measure out whatever. 2 cups or 4 cups of berries in a bag and freeze them that way, and that's really convenient. And again, that sealing, yeah, definitely will help them, will keep much longer. I mean, October or longer, I suppose, depends on how many you have, of course, and how fast you use them.
Excellent.
Good. Yeah, good question. And a good reminder that when you're preserving your berries, yeah, that individual quick freeze or whatever that technique is called, like single layer on a cookie sheet.
And, that really applies if you want to freeze. Say you've got garden vegetables, too, that you're blanching and want to freeze.
Mm-hmm.
You're not canning them, not putting them in jars, that you can do the same thing. So say whether you have peas or beans, or perhaps you want to freeze cooked carrots and other stuff. You know, you blanch the vegetables first, drop them in, then there's timing. The Alaska Cooperative Extension has pamphlets on all of that, on the timing, how many 2 minutes, 2, 3, 4 minutes, then, you drop them in boiling water, time them for 2 minutes, drop them into cold water or ice water to chill, and then if you put them, again, on those same cookie sheets to freeze, then they can go into the vacuum sealer bags also. So, again, it makes much less of a mess because it's hard to freeze really wet stuff. I know because I was just freezing some sockeye salmon today, and I had to keep wiping down the bags because it's just all the liquid that was getting squeezed out as the vacuum was applied to the fish.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, there's definitely an art to freezing as far as being happy with what's in your freezer a few months later.
Exactly, as opposed to making dog food or, frozen salmon that turns into fertilizer next year or whenever. Yeah, that's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah, you want, when you open your freezer, you want to be happy and be appetized by what you see. So you want to, it's worth putting in the work and figuring out the best practices. And that's a great plug for Alaska Cooperative Extensions. Their website is probably based out of the Fairbanks University website or thereabouts, but...
Yeah, right. If you just look up Alaska Cooperative Extension, and they have a list of publications, most of them are free to download. So, you know, and they've got different categories on gardening and on food preservation, and I was just looking that up yesterday, last night, and this morning again for... because I was canning salmon also today. So, or jarring salmon, I should say. So, getting the timing correct, so you're doing it properly and doing it safely.
Exactly. They've got a lot of great tips and just concrete numbers backed by science about, like, the food safe practices so that, you know, you're learning the art, but also learning a little bit of the science that makes it all possible.
And safe.
And safe.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you want to serve, you want to serve your friends and loved ones good food and safe food, and so they can come back for more.
Exactly. Well, that's a pretty fun note to end it on for this week, Ed. Why don't we leave it there, and we'll dive back in next Thursday.
All right. Sounds good. See what the weather is by then.
I know. I was just already thinking about talking about the rain that's finally arrived. Who knows, though? This summer is insane. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, until then, Ed, thanks a lot.
You're welcome, Warren. Bye.
All right, in the garden. Thank you so much to Master Gardener Ed Bajarski for coming through with the wisdom for us. And feel free over the course of the next week to drop us a line here at the station. Shoot me an email if you like, orin@kfsk.org. If you have a question you'd like me to put to Master Gardener Ed Bajarski next week. And just so glad to be able to pick his brain about the mysterious art of rainforest food growing. And speaking of growing, Flower Farm, thank you to them for underwriting this program. They're pretty good at growing. They grow those dahlias that are beautiful and in bloom right now, available by the stem bouquet or a subscription for a bouquet. They're at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing, every day but Wednesday. You can call them at 772-3464. All right, coming up next, we've got High Country Music with Lars Christensen.
You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot can of griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
This life I lead, well, I'd be Johnny Tomato Seed, 'cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery, out in the garden.